Welcome to the Class Ring Attire podcast. I'm Chris. Joel is out this week, so we've got our... Well, usually he's on the other side of this. This is our editor, Neil.
Hey.
And by editor, I mean, like, sound editor. He doesn't actually, like, have any say as far as, like, what we say. Not that kind of editor.
I could. Like a,
well, okay. Maybe...
I mean, I'm too lazy, but...
Sure. Perhaps. I don't know. If you were really devious about it, or had the time to really dive, you really just throw in some the music clips at the beginning of the end, and if we have a mail sack question, you throw in that song, and that
the cat knocks something over.
We were just talking, and I checked our email, like, in an effort of futility, I guess. And I told him, like, the analogy, like, our email is basically like a AM radio disc jockey just sitting there just wondering what that ring is, and someone finally comes and be like, oh, that's the telephone.
You that, like that analogy, don't you?
I really do. I thought it was clever.
That's pretty clever.
Thank you. But yeah, most of our interactions come on, like, Twitter and everything. And even then, it's mostly just, like, observations that don't really need to get brought up on the podcast, because it's just, we'll just be repeating ourselves, because, we feel the same way, you know, that kind of stuff.
This week, I was running the Twitter.
How many D&D references did you make on the Twitter this week?
Let's see, two, I think.
Okay, because when I looked, I was like, okay, all right, you need to space these out a little bit.
Oh, no, I was, like, maximum shitposting.
And it's been 2 minutes, and Neil's already had one thing he's got to edit.
To be fair, that's what the internet calls it.
Sure. And no, you're right. You could also say crap posting, or...
I mean, I guess so.
Poop posting, or... Poop posting sounds
I almost
fun.
Like poop posting better.
Yeah, I like poop posting. Let's go with that. So, on that, you're just, like... Just you saying poop posting?
Uh-huh.
Just put that over what you said earlier.
Yeah.
And, like, do it in super, like... awkward robotic way.
Yeah, like choopy choppy.
Yeah. So this is Class Ring Attire. it's weird. Is this setup, like, we're usually at Joel's place, but we're at my house and my setup.
I mean, we both could have driven 30 minutes to get to Joel's place and record there for no reason.
I've got keys. we can let ourselves in.
Do I have to fight past the cats too?
Yeah, here's the thing. I don't know if Joel's wife is out of town, too. I don't know if it's just Joel or what.
Surprise.
Yeah. Now, his brother's birthday is... it's today. I'm assuming it probably has something to do with that. If not, there's your excuse, Joel. Why don't you use that? So, we need to get to wrestling. No, there was a lot of it, and there was a lot
this
of...
This is true.
There was a lot of good wrestling as well, I should say.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if there was a whole lot to discuss about Raw. I'm actually kind of struggling hard right now to remember exactly what happened.
The thing I remember most about Raw was, because, you know, I watched sporadically, and, like, this week I was watching everything, and the camera work, like, where they have the hard camera now, like, I don't think it's completely hard anymore, like, because I saw some shots where it was...
Racing?
Yeah, right? It was, like, moving, like, back and forth, kind of across normally where it would be.
Right.
And for some reason, that really worked for me.
Yeah, no, and that's something that Joel brought up, I believe, last week or the week before. The camera work seems to be a lot smoother. It's just something about what they're doing right now is really working.
Yeah, like,
and a lot of it is, like, they're using some stuff that they've been experimenting with in NXT and moving it up to the main roster, and it's really working. I don't know if, like, because NXT's kind of proven as, like, Full Sail is, like, their full-on training ground for everybody.
Yeah, not, like, just on, wrestling talent, but,
right,
like,
so I don't know if they've, like, moved up some people from Full Sail to their production stuff, and I'm pretty sure they probably have.
Kind of like they did with, like, the announcing team, where, like, some guys are from NXT, and the guys that were already working kind of got split between Raw and SmackDown.
And some guys are just given the job, like David Otunga.
I didn't think he was that bad. I've heard complaints, but
here's the thing. I never really know exactly how to voice my displeasure about a lot of things.
Yeah.
And this is one of those, like, I don't know exactly how to describe what I dislike about his commentary.
Yeah.
I just know that I don't like it.
Yeah, I mean,
it may be just because it's clashing with JBL, and like, because it feels like JBL's clashing with everybody.
Yes.
Because it feels like he's even bringing Mara Ranallo down, which seems like impossible, because I love Ranallo.
Yep. And he sounds like Howard Cosell.
Yeah. Like, and just, all I have to do is, like, go and listen to Cruiserweight Classic with him and Daniel Bryan, where the commentary is incredible.
Well, I've even heard people don't like Daniel Bryan on commentary. I mean, I think
he's far from polished, clearly, but his enthusiasm about it is infectious.
Hey, sure.
And that is one of those things where it's like, okay, like, it sounds like he's having a fun time. So it's one of the things where, like, I don't know if I can really, like, criticize that much. And clearly he's trying, because he's one of those kind of guys that doesn't, you know, just take halfway measures to doing anything, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's clearly excited about what's going on, because clearly he knows all these guys. He knows, you know, sort of their history and their background and their style and everything. And he's
excited
to see him.
So that insight is an interesting dimension that's added to it because he's there.
Yeah, yep.
So what else from Raw? I really dug the Finn Balor segment.
You know, I never really noticed this before, but he's a funny looking dude.
He is a funny looking dude without the makeup.
Like,
he's a funny looking dude. He's a funny sounding dude.
Yeah.
Because
I've only seen him, you know, either in the makeup or in real life. You know, when he was not in the makeup on NXT, I didn't see him that much. But
and even especially when you look at like older photos of him with like you know, just teenager looking haircuts and whatnot, he looks even more goofy somehow. So I'm kind of glad he uses the makeup.
Yeah. I kind of wonder if he's going to pull it out for SummerSlam.
Oh, yeah, no, I can guarantee you he's going to pull it out for SummerSlam.
Yeah.
Like, pay-per-views are going to be, like, his new takeover, because used to, he would only do that for, takeover events.
Yeah.
So I fully expect for him to do that for pay-per-views. Now, what's interesting is going to be next week, because apparently Seth Rollins has called out, quote, the Demon King, which is apparently what they're calling it now.
Well,
they never called it the Demon King in NXT.
Yeah, they just called it the Demon.
Right.
Well,
but then again, this is probably a way to differentiate him from Kane.
Yeah, okay, that's you know? Fair.
Which is fine. I'm okay with, you know, because Demon King sounds pretty
sure,
good.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, so does Finn Balor, I think, but I mean, like I said on the Twitter, Balor's a demon from D&D, so.
And also in Irish lore, apparently. I don't know.
Yeah, that's where D&D got it from.
Yeah, so why are you being all history about it when?
Because like D&D's... I said, I knew it from D&D, and it's like, oh hey, they actually stole this from somewhere else.
So you're thinking that whoever came up with all this is a D&D nerd, and not someone who just knows Irish folklore?
I mean, come on, how many comic book nerds are there in wrestling right now?
Comic book nerds are a different thing. Sure. the inside of that Venn diagram is pretty big, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. Shut up. This happens every time Neil is on the podcast. We get on these really weird tangents.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for, bud.
So, listeners, buckle in. It's going to be interesting with Seth calling out the Demon King. Is Finn going to come out in the makeup, or he's just going to be like, no, not yet?
Oh, that could be. I mean, SummerSlam's a good time to bring out. Like,
I kind of want him to debut it at SummerSlam for the main roster audience.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if he had happened to show up on a pay-per-view, like one of the lesser ones, then yeah, sure, it'd be like, oh, well, that's not, you know, you don't get to see that yet. But
while we're on the subject, and this is the first time that you've been on the podcast since they made this announcement, how do you feel about the name, the WWE Universal Championship?
Oh, it's obviously terrible. I mean,
good.
I don't think anybody's disagreeing with that.
You know how, you know, the, I know it's kind of, it's not an exact metaphor because it's two different companies.
Yeah.
But you know the 20th Century Fox intro, YouTube video where somebody's playing the theme song on a recorder. That's what I think of. But with, like, the Universal intro with the big letters floating in front of the globe. And you just hear the guy just completely murdering that theme song. I know it doesn't work because it's a different company, but still.
Yeah.
Or Fox Searchlight or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I never liked WWE World Heavyweight title anyway. Like, that always sounded like kind of a mouthful.
Yeah.
And then I don't really like the idea of it.
That's why I was okay with them going back and just calling it the WWE Championship.
Yeah, no, that completely makes sense.
Except this week they've been calling it the WWE World Championship.
Yeah.
But again, trying to differentiate and be like, no, this is the world. This was the Universal. It trumps the world. Like,
yeah.
And it's just, like, they could have played into that with, because Stephanie was the one who introduced it and the brand split.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one that came up, like, in KFAB, she's the one that came up with the name because she introduced it.
Oh, yeah, right.
So she had this perfect opportunity. Like, they've got the World Championship. We've got the Universal Championship. You know, really play that up.
I guess they
would. Which would be a great heel move because it's so dumb.
As a heel move, I guess.
Because then it just becomes a semantics. Like, you can name it. You can name a championship anything.
Well, at least they're leaning into it at that point, like, kind of letting you know that they know it's dumb.
Yeah. And it's like, the good thing about it does kind of create a tier system. Because at the bottom you have the U.S. Championship, then you have the Intercontinental, which is multiple countries, then you have the World, then you have the Universe.
Yeah, I mean, it's just another thing that kind of buries SmackDown, though. Like, I like the idea
of... Oh, sure, yeah. Oh, absolutely. they've done a great job burying SmackDown.
I mean, I really like the idea of Raw has a championship on it, SmackDown has a championship on it, and then there's the superior all of WWE championship that floats back and forth between the two.
Sure.
And you have, like, a constant, like, level of bragging rights going back, you know, who's right. got it between one or the other. And this kind of just kills that. And it gives you
and honestly, to ignore it. I'm not sure yet how I feel, because they haven't done it yet, but they've already confirmed it with Daniel Bryan has. That they are going to be creating a, like, SmackDown-specific women's championship and tag team championship. Which they kind of led into a little bit with the American Alphas segment this week. Mm-hmm. When all of the other three tag teams came out.
Oh, yeah.
I think that, like, other than Fabriz, those were all the tag teams.
Yeah, they were, weren't they?
Breezango for the uninitiated, but Fabriz is a better name.
It is.
But yeah, like that's the depth of their tag team division. They're gonna have a championship. I'd rather them just make the tag team championship, like, universal for both.
It kind of gives them room to bury SmackDown, if everything is kind of ghettoized over on SmackDown and Raw has its own version of everything.
And I don't think the women's division on SmackDown is much better.
Yeah, it kind of has the same problem where there's just not quite enough few people to sustain championship on its own there.
Yeah, I mean, the top of their division is Becky and Natalya, and I guess they're trying with Eva Marie and her scapegoating of every match she's ever in.
Yeah, well, I actually thought that was fun. But
oh, sure. No, I'm not complaining. Yeah. Eva Marie is best when she's not wrestling. And kudos to WWE for finally figuring that out.
Well done. Yeah.
Because they tried, they sent her down to Brian Kendrick's wrestling school, who is one of the internet's favorite guys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he's a very incredibly talented wrestler. Like, and he's been doing this for a very long time. Like, his first wrestling match was against Daniel Bryan and vice versa.
Right.
And he couldn't make her he made her a more passable of a wrestler.
Yeah.
She didn't completely stink up the show when she was in NXT. She's not great, not by any means.
No. But just character-wise, they got her figured out.
But character-wise, I feel like she does she's got enough heat just by being her.
Yeah.
And in the situation that she's
they're working with it now. They woke up to it.
It's like, if they would suddenly realize and do the same with Roman, you know?
Yeah. I guess
and
Eva
stop
Marie was
against the current on that one.
Yeah, I guess Eva Marie didn't have that sort of built-in appeal to the higher ups.
Although, and I guess this will be a nice transition. There is, like, dirt sheet reports, so take that for whatever you want. there is reports that are saying that if this feud with Rusev is successful, he'll be right back in the main event picture.
Mm.
I
kind of like him where he is right now.
Honestly, yeah, it's kind of a little bit, you know, he's still in that face position, but I feel like he's got less pressure on himself. Because he seemed a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah, relaxed is the right word
With the and I honestly, I given what we've seen with Roman these past few months, I actually kind of liked the segment this week.
Yeah, against, well, like Rusev is a good example of somebody that's like something that's simple but it works.
Right,
like you know, it's not a complicated character. It's not a complicated story. And
neither is Roman.
And exactly, neither is Roman. So, like, he feels more comfortable there.
It's just big guys punch hard.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
And, you know, very simple, like, characterization just of, this is the big, arrogant, foreign guy.
Sure.
And, you know, here's Roman who's, like, gonna, you know, go teach him a lesson. Sure. That's all you need, you know?
Yeah.
Don't overthink it.
Right. But it is funny that they're just, you know, using Rusev to just have a top guy just tee off on him again. Build him to be unstoppable.
I'm shocked Rusev has survived as long as he has.
You know what? I gotta give that guy a lot of credit.
Yeah.
He's an incredible workhorse of a wrestler. They relied on him a lot of times for just getting any sort of heat.
Yep.
You know? And he's, you know, as long as he's got... Even a lot of it, honestly, was without Lana. Because she really wasn't on the shows when he was doing the... Leave Nations thing.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And, you know, he was probably a big reason why that group lasted as long as it did.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't call it successful, but it lasted...
Well, there's always room for that kind of thing, so...
Sure. I still love the Royal Rumble part where Lee came in and took out Roman. Not to take him out, but they, like... started fighting him, and then Rusev did the running thing across the other announce tables.
Yeah.
And then did a splash on the last announce table, went through it, grabbed the TV monitor, raised it over his head like a trophy, and, like, walked off with it. And I forgot what his tweet was, but, something along the lines, like, she wanted to be on TV more. I bring her TV success, or something like that.
Hey.
Something along those lines. The funny thing was, like, the next week they all had brand new model of monitors. So, apparently he knew something.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Lana helps, though. Like, she...
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, she's kind of... Again, it's simple. It's not an original story by any means, but they make it work.
I do like how she just kind of slips in and out of that accent now.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, sometimes it's Russian, like, wait, sometimes it's quite, Floridian.
She's not quite hitting those R's the same way
as
she just was 2 seconds ago.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, and again, like, I could completely, like, you know, try to pick her apart on all that, but it's not, like, yeah, like you said, it's not exactly a deep character to begin with.
Sure,
so
yeah.
What does it matter? Like, she's going to completely drop that accent at some point.
And
WWE's going to act like it's always been that way.
Yeah,
you know, like Kofi.
Yep. Well, it's kind of just endemic of this new era of where you kind of have to make kayfabe match up somewhat to real life.
Right.
You know, the fact that these two people in real life are actually married.
Right.
And then you kind of got to play with that in kayfabe when gets to TV.
Which is so weird because that whole situation of them, like, announcing their engagement, even though their characters were not with each other anymore.
Right.
That was so risky on them, and, like, that could have blown up in their faces so much. And, like, I feel like they probably paid a little bit of it for it. Like, Lana was pretty much taken off TV for a while.
Yeah.
And Rusev was kind of, like I said, delegated to the League of Nations.
But when they do, like, the WWE documentary of Rusev's story, you know it's going to be that they're not even going to make that distinction. It's just going to be, you know, these two people, like...
They're not even going to talk about that time that Lana was, you know, quote-unquote hooking up with Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, or whatever. Right.
So... But, I mean, good for them. They made it work, and like they bounced back from it, which is a good... Which is, you know, a
it's good testament to
thing
their work,
to show Roman. Be like, hey, you messed up big time. You can still bounce back from it, you know? Because clearly, like, I don't think Rusev was ever at risk of being released or anything over them announcing
the
engagement.
Yeah, he's never... Well, because, like, he had kind of the same build as somebody like Ryback. But
speaking of someone who got let go, Ryback's gone.
Yeah.
I mean, well, he's been gone for a while. Like, he was just kind of sitting out the rest.
Ineffectively, but yeah.
Right, he was been sitting out the rest of his contract.
Yep.
But he's officially gone. I don't know, like, because I don't really know what figures are for other independent wrestlers. Mm-hmm. But I did just read a report that he's asking for $4,500 per appearance. And if it is a, like, a... And if the it's a if it's an independent promotion with a booker that's not, like, well established,
mm-hmm.
he charges $5,000. Again, like, I don't know if that's, like, I don't know
anything where that lands, but I seriously wonder if people are willing to.
But I'm sure, like, for the rest of his life, you know, he can have on posters, like, former WWE star or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, and he can, and that probably adds a little bit more value to his asking price.
Yeah, but there was such a cloud over him, at least in my mind, that I don't know how much he's going to draw.
But it's still, like, you know, again, like, this is the same guy who's complaining on Tumblr, like, saying all wrestlers should be paid the same. So it's like, okay, you should be making $40 now, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I don't know. I never really liked Ryback that much in the first place, but he had a weird
career arc. And I, again, like, there was a lot of things with Ryback that didn't quite click, and not all of it is entirely his fault.
That's true. That's fair.
You know, somehow that monster build that he got worked
for the crowd initially.
It worked for the crowd, and he got over big time. Again, in the whole, the initial CM Punk.
When he was going against CM Punk, opponent, and then sort of the Shield started coming in right about that time.
Sure. And it was right around that time where he was over as all get out. Like, there was that Hell in a Cell where they ended the match with Ryback doing the Feed Me More from the top of the cage, mm-hmm. and the crowd's eating it up.
Yeah, it was like Daniel Bryan levels of the crowd chanting along exactly right. on cue.
And it was at that point where I was like, all right, they found their new John Cena, you know? You know, how did they ruin that? They turned him heel the day after WrestleMania 29 and got immediately buried by Cena.
Yeah.
You know, like, immediately buried
well, that's
by a, Cena.
That's kind of where I got to the Rusev comparison, is Rusev went up against Cena at WrestleMania, mm-hmm. and he totally came out, well, you know, pretty well out of that
sure.
for being, you know, destroyed. And, like, you know, he was put over pretty well compared to, like, you look at the difference between their entrances. Rusev had an enormous entrance at WrestleMania.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
And, you know, John Cena really didn't, oddly.
Whereas Ryback was a big deal that whenever he did, like, his little, you know, wake up thing, he actually got fireworks and not just the fireworks sound.
Yeah.
You know, that was a big deal for him.
Yeah.
Congratulations, you know. So I kind of, you know, but as far as, and honestly, I hated the name, but I was starting to kind of like Rybaxel. They were having some interesting backstage segments that were hilarious, to be honest with
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
And he kind of played a really good straight guy in that situation.
Huh,
like,
yeah.
you know, Axel was kind of the comedic foil, and he
yeah,
was, you know, just
okay.
he was the brick wall that it bounced pretty well off of.
Yeah, yeah.
And they even, like, incorporated Hornswoggle, and it was just it was hilarious.
Yeah.
So I was kind of sad that broke up.
It kind of faded away. I don't really remember, like, any...
I believe they kind of just... I think they got reinterested in Ryback again for a little bit.
Okay.
When they started really running with the big guy thing.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like they kind of tried again, but not
they
too
never
much.
Committed, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. He had, like, one Intercontinental... He had an Intercontinental Championship reign. He won it, like, after Daniel Bryan had to vacate it.
Okay.
After WrestleMania 31.
Okay.
And I don't think that lasted too long. And then from that point on, he was...
just kind of floating around, not doing anything.
He was the king of the kickoff show.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, good riddance.
I guess, yeah.
But speaking of former talent, Damian Sandow's on TNA now. He actually made his debut, or at least they announced it officially tonight. So I haven't really seen any footage of it. I think that he's going under a different name.
Probably,
more than likely. I don't know if he's going by his real name, Aaron Stevens, or what.
That's an unfortunately boring name for him.
Right. But I'm assuming he's probably going to go under a different name.
Yeah.
I honestly, I You know me. It's so easy and it's so quick for me to make fun of TNA.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with the whole, with the whole Broken Matt and Brother Nero thing going on right now. Have you watched any of that, by the way?
No, I actually haven't.
You're lucky. I'm sending you so many links so you can suffer like the rest of us. Which is unfair. Well, okay. See, here's the thing. I don't necessarily like the outcome or what was the output of all that.
Yeah.
But what I do appreciate is the fact that TNA gave them the creative freedom to just...
Gave them the space to try something.
To try something. And, yeah. I don't know the power structure at TNA. I don't know if you have to be, like, a Hardy level of a name to be able to be given that.
Yeah.
But if they give any sort of creative freedom to formerly Damian Sandow...
Yeah, this is true.
I feel like he could come up with something that's watchable.
Yeah.
Personally, I'm excited by that.
If there's one thing that we know about Damian Sandow is he can make crap work.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Think about if it was his own original idea and it doesn't start off as crap.
You're right.
Because pretty much everything he's been given starts off as crap.
Yeah.
And we all come on the podcast and be like, poor guy.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, he makes it work and he's like, it's the most over thing in the company.
Yeah, yep.
You know?
Still can't believe they released him.
I think
if he'd lasted a little bit longer, he probably would have found a spot on SmackDown.
And that's how I feel about a lot of guys. Maybe not Ryback.
Right.
Wade Barrett, Cody Rhodes.
Yep.
A lot of them, I felt like, would have found a good, personally satisfying...
Home
for themselves.
That was something that even happened on Raw. I don't know if you heard it. There's that segment with Cesaro where Daniel Bryan was out talking to Mick Foley.
Yeah.
And, the focus moved off to Daniel Bryan, but he kind of, like, stuck his head back in the frame and was like, hey, Cesaro, you know, if you're bored here, we got room for you over on SmackDown. Right.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good moment, but it...
And, like, yeah, like, I if we can call anything a plus of the brand split, one of them being Cesaro wrestled in the main event.
Yeah.
Against Sheamus. And honestly, like, we give Sheamus some crap sometimes.
Yes.
We give Sheamus a lot of crap sometimes. But, like, we know the kind of match Sheamus likes. Sheamus likes having a super stiff style match.
And this one was great.
Because you had somebody, like, you had a brawler like Sheamus, mm-hmm. and you have somebody who has such an immense strength and technical skill as mm-hmm. Cesaro, and I feel like that's a really good mix.
Yeah, he got a great match out of Sheamus.
Yes. So honestly, I'm okay with them, because I'm assuming there's probably going to be a some sort of a rubber match, because I can't remember who won after Roman made the... Or after... No, it wasn't. It wasn't even a match against Sheamus. It was a match against Rusev this week. But the week before was the match against Sheamus.
He was out for two different segments.
That's
this
right.
week.
Yeah, I'm getting all mixed up.
Yeah,
because it was kind of because he did fight Sheamus earlier that night.
Yeah, he fought Sheamus. Yeah, I don't know if it was a formal match, like belled match, but he fought him.
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
And it was because it was the second week in a row that they fought against each other.
That's
both,
right.
That's both right. times, that's where I was getting confused. And so the main event was against Rusev,
mm-hmm.
and was a great match.
Mm-hmm.
Especially considering how, you know, Cesaro competed earlier.
Yeah, that was the other thing. I even said this on Twitter.
So I found myself, like, not hating the idea of Sheamus and Cesaro at SummerSlam.
Right.
Which
right.
I'm assuming is where they're leading with this.
But, yeah, probably, like, you know, a mid-card match. Yeah, but yeah, it was, you know, just testament to Cesaro that he looked less tired at the end of the second match.
Yeah.
And I think that was just because he was so excited to be doing something, you know, in the main event and being on TV and, you know, kind of being appreciated.
Yeah, so, and, you know, a lot of, you know, the negative naysayers would be like, well, it did end up with Roman looking victorious over everybody or whatever.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, yeah, but we got a lot of Cesaro this week. And he was in the main event.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, like, it felt like they were treating Cesaro like a bona fide, like, star.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see how the booking goes. But.
Sure. We don't know how, and, you know, we don't know how this is going to play out, but it's encouraging that they're taking, because it's like they listened to exactly what Cesaro had to say the night of the draft,
mm-hmm.
which wasn't exactly flattering to WWE.
No.
And it could have easily backfired in his face.
Oh, yeah. I thought he was done after
Right. He was speaking his mind, and, you know, I'll commend him all day for that. But at the same time, from WWE standpoint, they probably would have put him in the doghouse. Okay, let's put it this way. If that was Dolph Ziggler, he would have been put in the doghouse.
If it were before the brand split and they didn't need good guys on all the shows all the time,
yeah,
he would have been in the doghouse. I mean, he already was, but...
Well, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, well, you know, I'm not exactly going anywhere with this company right now anyway.
Yeah, right. You might as well.
But I have, like, all this momentum somehow still with the fans.
Mm-hmm.
Might as well just try something.
Yeah, right.
And I think
it's the brand split has worked well for Raw in that it's given them a little bit of breathing room.
Yeah.
They don't have to get...
They have a bigger roster out of the two shows, but they still have more breathing room than they used to.
They don't have to constantly be putting over Roman and, like, their top, you know, three or four guys. That's not what Raw has to do every single week now.
Yeah.
Because they don't have as many of those top, you know, guys that they're 100% committed to. They've got a little room to give some of the limited card more time to kind of bubble up to the top.
Yeah. I agree. So I guess we should then talk about the Stone Cold podcast with Dean.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to watch
that? I ended up not watching it, but...
It got a lot of flack online, because it started from a pretty awkward spot, which is not a great starting point.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to put most of that responsibility on Steve Austin, which is surprising because he's, out of all the wrestlers who have podcasts, he's clearly the best interviewer.
Yes.
Out of all of them. And typically, this is not something that trips him up in the slightest.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't quite, according to Dean, as they were talking, he didn't get quite any of his information correctly on Dean's early life.
Hmm.
You know, Stone Cold was trying to allude to, oh, you had a rough childhood, you know, public housing or something, blah, blah, blah. And Dean was like, no, not at all. And clearly, like, Dean was like, didn't want to talk about it and, like, just, you know, kind of like
shut it down.
Try to shut it down. And again, like, it could have been true. But even if it wasn't, he clearly didn't want to talk about it.
Okay.
But Stone Cold just like, wait, what? Like, this is what I got. Like, what are we talking about? Like, he was kind of flabbergasted by it. And, you know, so it got a little awkward there. But then once they actually got talking about wrestling, smooth conversation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I heard some pretty negative stuff about it. And
okay, let's put it this way. It had some pretty negative bookends.
Pretty awkward
bookends. The beginning of it started like I just said. In the end, Stone Cold, who's, you know, he said he's a fan of Dean, and he went back and he watched a lot of Dean's older stuff from other promotions where he goes just bat poop crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and does some really unthinkable things in the ring. And he also watched his promos where he goes, you know, way further than he can in WWE.
Oh, yeah.
So, Stone Cold was like, let me just, a little quick word of advice, push the envelope even further.
Mm-hmm.
And Dean's just like, I'm trying.
Yeah.
Like, I can only do this so much. Like, come on, like, you know, that kind of thing.
It's true.
You can kind of tell, like, he was like, maybe, I'm not exactly offended, but he was just like, kind of took exception to it.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, during the rest of the interview, like, Dean was pretty, like, laid back and, you know, He other than like the brief moments where Stone Cold got his information wrong, other than that, he was pretty much laid back and, you know, non-confrontational and just having a chat.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, like, Stone Cold just took that as like, oh, this guy's way too laid back. He's lackadaisical. Because Stone Cold's like, where's your head at now that you've gotten the championship? It's like, I'm comfortable. But he meant it like, I feel like I'm exactly where I need to be.
Okay.
And now I shoulder this responsibility of being the captain of the SmackDown, like that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, the way he answered that, Stone Cold took that as, this dude's getting complacent.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Which, you know, he's in an interview segment, so he's not going to be...
You can't say that directly. Yeah. And it counts at that point, because those are live, aren't
right.
they?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Typically, those are live.
Yeah.
And that one was. And it was just one of those things where it's just like, I don't know. I think Stone Cold got like, kind of taken off his game.
Yeah.
At the beginning, and recovered a little bit. Yeah. And then just, I think he was just something, there was a misfiring of something.
Yeah. You know? Dean's always been kind of an odd duck, even in other interviews too.
Like, but again, like once you get him comfortable, he's just an easy conversation. Yeah, you know?
Sure.
Like I hate to, you know, sing his podcasting praises, but in this instance, Jericho kind of got it right because Jericho had Dean on the podcast. And okay. I think they talked about UFOs and conspiracy theories first. And eventually worked into like more personal stuff, you know?
Huh.
And again, like I said, typically Stone Cold knocks these things out of the park.
Right. No, the ones I've seen have been great.
Brock Lesnar was kind of boring, but that's just because the guy likes...
not Stone Cold's fault.
The guy just loves farming.
He's not paid for his brain.
No, Brock just likes farming. That's it.
Yeah. Killing things.
Yeah, but I do like that they are now having him interview current, younger stars.
Yeah, like the one with Paige was kind of out of nowhere.
Right, and we always chalked that one up to, like, it was supposed to be Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, and then that but then blew up.
The recording came out and found out he's a racist.
Yep.
And so they brought Paige on, and it was just kind of, you know, it felt kind of a last minute kind of
thing. Sure.
So I'm not trying to throw stones at Stone Cold or anything. Stones. But, you know, it's just, they can't all be great, you know?
Yeah.
It's like we're all sitting around waiting for Marvel to make a bad movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if you do something great too many times, then it's just a question of, you know, when's the first bad one going to happen?
Right. Well, and again, like, it wasn't bad completely throughout. It's just, it was bookend with some pretty awkward
You know, I'd like to see him do an interview here lately with Roman Reigns after, you know, this whole thing. Just because Stone Cold...
If he could get Roman Reigns to just be himself...
Yeah, right.
But I feel like he's going to have... I'm not saying they're actively going to pressure him, but I feel like he himself is going to put pressure on himself.
Yeah, he'll be just too scared to toe
the company
up.
Line.
Yeah.
It was one of the last times that a active WWE wrestler was on the Colt Cabana podcast before, you know, CM Punk.
Yeah.
The whole CM Punk thing. They had Miz on, and it was like, I think he didn't quite know they were recording at the beginning, and so he was just Mike.
Okay.
And then once he was like, well, so we're live? And all of a sudden he was the Miz, you know, that character, company guy.
Well, like, the reason I point out Stone Cold is because his unique ability is to kind of speak truth to power a little bit.
Sure.
Like, when he interviewed Vince, when he interviewed Triple H, he kind of wasn't afraid to ask, you know, real questions.
Sure, and those guys have the power to answer those questions however they want.
Yeah.
Even when they had, like, Cena. Well, no, Cena was on Jericho when Jericho had a thing on the network.
Okay.
But still, like, and it's something that Stone Cold has to put into perspective, is these current wrestlers right now aren't necessarily in a position where they can just, you know, do a shoot interview.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They can't quite do that. Like, some of them don't feel like they have that standing within the company.
Yeah. That's
They're like, true. Oh, if I say that, or if I say this, I'll be okay.
You know? Yeah, that's true.
You know, so he's got to take that into effect. But at the same time, like, it felt like, because it was, whenever he first started doing this, Stone Cold was like, man, everyone's been telling me to ask some hard-hitting questions, and I just talk, like, I don't know what I'm, like.
Yeah.
But then, this time, it felt like he was going for a hard-hitting questions. It's like he was trying to pull a tearjerker at the very beginning of it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's when it just doesn't feel like a Stone Cold.
It was less natural.
Podcast, yeah. So again, like, it wasn't bad, just booking by awkward stuff. SmackDown, I'm not exactly sure what all else we need to cover. Felt like your typical old school SmackDown ending in the tag team. You know?
The ghost of Teddy Long.
The ghost of Teddy Long, even though he's not even dead. I'm still trying to figure out what in the world they're going to do with Bray right now. It feels like projecting a Bray running at SummerSlam in some fashion.
Yes. Yeah.
Some event.
As involved he's been with, you know, all these storylines, that I'd be surprised if he didn't appear in SummerSlam in some sense.
Absolutely. beyond that, I mean, we got the Eva Marie thing again.
Yeah, that's just moving along.
Honestly, like, I'm not saying SmackDown was necessarily bad, but
it feels perfunctory. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it still feels like they're trying to get their feet underneath them.
Yeah.
You know?
It feels very kind of straight up and down. Okay, here's the dudes. Here's the matches. They do right. The matches. Okay, show's over.
A lot of it honestly feels like, because I don't feel like, because, you know, clearly they don't have time to introduce the tag team and women's championship before SummerSlam.
Yes.
Because otherwise they probably would have announced something by now.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
I feel like they're just kind of waiting to get through SummerSlam, and then after that will be their, I believe, right after that it will be SmackDown's first special, which okay. I believe those are exclusively on the network.
Yeah.
I feel like that's when they can really start kind of
that's fair
gaining some steam. I feel like right now they're just kind of like just getting through SummerSlam so they can finally like fire on all cylinders.
Yeah, I feel like kind of that's a holding pattern right now.
I feel like that's when they're probably going to get an influx of some talent, like some of the indie free agents or former wrestlers that they've been looking
mm-hmm.
at.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, Shelton Benjamin isn't going to be coming back because he has a pretty serious shoulder injury now.
Okay,
but he was supposed to come back to SmackDown.
Mm-hmm. Rhino, isn't he?
Rhino, but I feel like he's going to be pretty sporadic, especially since he won the Republican primary in Michigan.
Yeah, well, they brought that up on the show.
Yeah, and I thought that was great.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, just keep going. Like, just keep the Heath Slater thing going on SmackDown.
Yeah.
Because I love those segments now.
Yeah, this is great use of them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. But yeah, like I said, like once they get through SummerSlam, I feel like that's when SmackDown's really going to find their footing.
Well, that's optimistic. I like it.
Thanks. moving on to Wednesday.
Yep.
We had NXT. They did the contract signing for the Women's Championship match.
Yep.
Got Asuka versus Bayley.
Yep.
First match was great.
Sure.
Fully expecting that from the second match. God, I love how goofy Nakamura can be. Both yeah. the backstage interview and him doing the I got your nose thing to Joe. And because he knows, like, it's an ultimate troll move. Like, how do you, when somebody's mad at you, how do you make them more mad at you? Act like it's not affecting you at all.
Play with them.
And that's basically what he was doing.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in this Cien Almas versus Bobby Roode.
Yeah.
God, I still love his theme song.
I was just going to say, that was stuck in my head all day today.
It's been stuck in my head mostly because of Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa's Twitter account. Series.
Yeah.
Man. yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they're going to do with... I'm guessing probably TM61 is going to face off against Authors of Pain.
Probably.
But no, well, actually, it probably will be something that they record before they go live with Brooklyn.
Okay.
With Brooklyn 2.
Okay.
But tape it and air it the next week after. Because that's what they did last year. They did a bunch of matches before they went live. Just for the fans there.
Yeah, just to make it a full-length show for the fans.
Right, because I'm assuming that next week they're probably not going to have time to record stuff.
Yeah. That's fair.
They usually do that at all their like bigger touring events.
Mm-hmm.
Is they'll record a few things because they recorded at least a month, maybe like a month and a half. It felt like a month and a half's worth of NXTs that they recorded from the convention floor at Fan Access at WrestleMania this year.
Oh, okay.
They did a lot of recordings, which is fine, you know, because that's a busy time.
Sure, sure.
But it did get stale after a while. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. Austin Aries versus Noé Jose.
yeah.
Because again, like Noé Jose is clearly a comedy act, but I feel like this match is going to get a decent amount of time.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see exactly, what we're going to get out of No Way Jose.
Yeah, I love what he can do in that kind of format.
I love him. I think he's amazing. But I'm kind of interested to see how, because even when he was working here in North Carolina in the Independence, I think under his real name, I don't know.
I don't remember what it was.
I think he was injured at the time, so I never actually got to see him work. He just came out with a big Dominican flag. I think it was Dominican. Came out with a big flag and just, you know, playing up the Rusev-esque
character. Yeah, sure,
But never actually wrestled.
Okay.
And
I mean, his short little thing at Concord was solid work, but it was short. You know, it was...
But it was a perfect opening match for that night.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, his work was impressive in that, like... You know, because the whole crowd was amped through the roof, and they kept on chanting his song through the whole thing.
Oh, sure.
And he was able to incorporate that into his ring work.
Yeah.
Like, he kind of did ring work on that beat. And that was positive, I thought. But we'll see in sort of this more formal...
I agree. Yeah.
One-form format.
But moving on to Cruiserweight. Because I feel like that is, like, the big moment from the week. First of all, did you get any chance to watch any of the previous Cruiserweight?
I watched a little bit of the Gargano
Ciampa
match, yeah.
Because I talked about it last week. That match instantly, I felt like, instantly made it into the top three of match of the year.
Yeah.
You know, and part of it might have been, like, just because it was just the only match out of that first round that had a story to it.
Yeah.
Which made sense because those are the only guys that had any sort of connection. The rest of them, you know, probably never face off against each other, you know. But even from the first round, aside from that one match, a lot of people were talking about Cedric Alexander.
Yes.
In his first match. I forgot exactly who he was going up against, but, you know, he opened a lot of eyes and wowed a lot of people. And so when they announced that he would be going up against Kota Ibushi in the second round, everyone's like, that match is going to be something.
Yes.
It's going to be something. But even the first match,
That was the thing.
Tajiri, like, versus Gran Metalik.
Gran Metalik, I kind of figure Gran Metalik would be the one to move on.
Oh, sure.
Just because of how they framed it.
How they framed it, knowing already that WWE has signed him.
Yeah.
I mean, they've also, like, have already signed Tajiri as well.
Okay.
Who, again, looks incredible for 46 years old.
Yeah, right?
His kicks are something vicious. Like, basically standing right in front of a guy and still being able to super kick him in the head.
Super kick him in the head and have such a good follow through on it. Because, like, a lot of people do the thing where they kick him and kind of, like, slap them with their foot. And, like, it makes a good noise. But, like, if you actually look at it, it doesn't really... You know, you can kind of tell they're pulling it.
Well, a lot of them, like, do the slap on the leg.
Well, that as well. But, like, the way he does those, what do they call them, buzzsaw kicks?
Yeah.
Where, like, he kicks and then pushes you down with his foot. Yeah, that really adds a whole lot to the look of the thing.
I will tell you this, and I might even make you watch it before you leave tonight.
Okay.
The match that went on before Gargano and Ciampa last week. Jack Gallagher versus Fabian Aichner.
Okay.
Aichner is a guy I've never heard of, but he looks like a guy that WWE would be drooling over.
Big dude.
But Gallagher, because it's spelled like Gallagher.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But Gallagher is like what the vaudevillains should be.
Oh, that guy.
That guy.
That guy.
He was incredible, and I feel like he would be your new favorite.
Okay.
If Cesaro wasn't here.
Yeah, because they showed him and a couple other guys from the CWC on NXT.
On NXT, yeah.
Yeah.
But the moment that we've all joined here today, friends. Kota Ibushi versus Cedric Alexander.
Yes.
First of all, as great as that match was, easily the MVP of that match, I felt like, was Cedric Alexander.
Yeah, sure.
Not saying, like, anything negative about Kota Ibushi, because he was incredible.
It kind of felt like Kota Ibushi, again, was going to be, like, I kind of felt like I knew who was going to win that match.
Oh, sure, yeah. He's a, like, international megastar.
Right. Like, so even with that hanging over the match, as suspenseful
Alexander,
as it was.
Yeah, Cedric Alexander is just a guy from Charlotte who should have been treated better than he was at Ring of Honor.
Yeah,
from what I've heard, like, again, I don't pretend to know everything about Ring of Honor or other independent countries. Or, why did I say countries?
Yeah,
other independent
promotions.
Promotions.
Okay.
Why I said countries, I don't know. Mm.
Of course, nowadays.
Sure. So clearly not as much was known about Cedric Alexander.
Yeah.
But again, like, he had made such a splash in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, all right, now let's see what he can do against somebody that is just as spectacular to watch.
Yeah, as somebody else who is a big deal.
And this is going to sound like a super old Tommy, but boy howdy.
Well, I think the reaction at the end of the match really said it all.
Right. And
what that crowd was chanting. You know,
I saw some posts from people who were there, like, I am so happy. I'm so glad that they actually showed that.
Yes.
You know, it was like a post-credits thing.
Yes, yes.
And I'm so glad that they put that in there.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to see that in, like, legit shoot emotion out of Cedric Alexander.
Or even when Triple H came out.
Which,
that looked shoot, too.
Absolutely. If they had planned that out, we would have gotten Triple H's music.
Yeah.
He probably would be wearing his actual, like, the jacket along with his suit.
Yeah,
Cedric Alexander probably wouldn't have tried to shake his hand holding a water bottle.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But just, like, that moment, like, just everyone chanting, sign Alexander.
Please sign Cedric. Yeah.
And then Triple H, like, literally is like, he comes out and he's like, all right.
Yeah, he's like, I hear you. I hear you. You know, just that level of acknowledgement feels so good.
Right. And I'm like, and this is a guy who, again, not nearly as much exposure as a lot of the other guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wrestling fans in North Carolina know who he is because he's been wrestling at like every promotion around here.
Yeah.
Like, and we all know, like, this guy's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But as far as, like, the rest of the world,
yeah,
not nearly as much.
It feels so good to just have kind of everybody be on the same page and everybody, you know, realize what's going on, both local people here, people around, you know, fans around the world, and also the people at WWE all kind of being on the same page.
Right, and I haven't done this yet, but I need to go back and watch to see, like, the reaction, the reaction he got in his, like, intro of his first match in the first round.
Before people saw him.
Right, compared to the end of the second.
Yes.
You know, and see how much of a differential there is.
Yeah.
But the fact that was able to make that much of an impression out of, like, two wrestling matches,
mm-hmm.
again, a lot of it helps with who his dance partner was, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
You know? But man, that match was incredible. Like, I did not think that they would be able to top Gargano and Ciampa, and let alone do it the very next week.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Well, I think that kind of speaks to how good of an idea the CWC has ended up being.
Oh, sure.
Because it's every match is somebody's last match. Every match is somebody's last chance to make an impression.
Right.
Every match has to be the best match that that person can put on.
Right. And with this cruiserweight division being created in Raw, and they don't have that many cruiserweights on the Raw roster right now, so like, a lot of them would come from this Cruiserweight Classic. There's your perfect guy to build around right there. With Cedric Alexander. Because Kota Ibushi, you know, he's kind of, he kind of does whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. Like, it was heavily rumored that he was very close to signing to WWE and probably would. But then he was like, I still got some stuff in Japan I want to accomplish.
Hmm.
You know, he's
kind of willing to walk away from stuff.
Right. So I don't know if they're probably going to, at least, I think he's probably going to be in the finals.
Yeah. He'll get up pretty far.
Right. But I don't know if they want to put their full weight behind him for the cruiserweight division.
Right.
Cedric Alexander is a guy that you can do that with.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, like, give it to him immediately, because he's one of those guys that you make him chase for a while.
Yeah.
Like Daniel Bryan.
You can make him grow.
Right. Because the moment he wins and finally succeeds, that crowd can easily get behind him. They're already going to be behind him, but that moment where he finally succeeds to the top of that mountain.
It's a good place to end a story. You know,
precisely.
It's a good thing to build to.
And, you know, if WWE likes having, if they're building something around somebody, they like that person to be, you know, a good old red-blooded American.
Yeah.
That speaks English, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Compared to, you know, the international flavor of the Cruiserweight Classic.
Yes.
If they're going to have it all built around one guy, they're more likely to build it around a Cedric Alexander.
Yeah, especially somebody who is, relatively speaking, new. And somebody that they can build, and somebody that they can build kind of loyalty with.
Right.
And build a relationship with. They prefer their homegrown guys to
outsiders. Sure. That's why I figured, like, Rich Swann was probably going... He's not really homegrown, but they made a big point of saying, like, this is at the time of them starting the Cruiserweight Classic. He was the only person that was signed to NXT in the entire field.
Yeah.
The guy, Gargano and Ciampa, who actually, like, signed with NXT... I believe after, like right after, around the same time that the Cruiserweight became a thing.
Okay.
But they had worked with NXT a lot.
Yeah, sure.
But now they're finally under contract, and I think, at least with Gargano, his last independent date is next month, I believe.
Oh, so they're still working independent stuff.
Well, yeah, like if they already have something on the books, WWE will let them finish out
sure.
what they did. It was kind of like the Samoa Joe contract when he first joined NXT.
Right.
They were letting him do both for a while, and then... they started realizing, oh no, he's selling out a lot of t-shirts. Let's lock him up.
Yeah,
but they still allowed him to finish out the rest of his deals.
That's fair.
Yeah. Okay. Which is really good on them.
Yeah, yeah. That's nice that they let them have a little bit of a transition, which they could easily refuse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, but the problem with all this is it's going to be next to impossible for anyone to beat that the rest of this tournament. You know what I mean?
Well, like I said, though, every match is somebody's last match. Everybody is trying really...
Yeah.
Like, every match for them is their pay-per-view match.
That's why you saw all that emotion out of Cedric Alexander.
Exactly.
But at the same time, through that emotion and through the reaction that he was getting from, like, all those kickouts...
Yeah.
And first of all, that kickout, that kickout transition that he did... Not transition, but...
Yeah.
He kicked out immediately, just kicked him in the head, and went right back at the pin. I love that. You never see anybody do something like that.
Yeah.
Usually it's like someone kicks out, the heel yells at the ref, and just pins again, or tries to go for the pin again. But never like any sort of offensive maneuver in between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. Mm-hmm. There was so many moments in that match.
Well, the velocity of everything, how fast everything was, how clean everything was.
How fast it was. They had their foot on the gas pedal the entire time.
Yes, you're right.
And they never really, like, slow. Like, there was the moments where they, like, it slowed down a little bit.
Well, just for pacing. But, like, it was...
They kept that pace up pretty much through the entire thing, and it was one of the longer matches in the Cruiserweight Classic. So that's impressive.
You know? Well, like, because, you know, these guys go on Raw, and they know, I just got to do this again, you know, probably for some house show this weekend, and then maybe there's a pay-per-view. And then I got to go do the whole thing next week. Like, they can't go full power on those matches. Whereas these guys, you know, they might just be going home after this. This is their chance. They got to put everything they have into that match.
Yeah. And, like, for those that are curious, my top three right now is Zayn Nakamura. I'm not saying in any sort of order because I still have
for
not.
For match of the year?
For match of the year. Zayn Nakamura, Ciampa, Gargano, and now...
Yeah.
Kota Ibushi and Cedric Alexander. And, like, it's going to be hard for me to choose between this match and last week's match. Because last week's match was... It was different, you know? It was still fast-paced, but it had a great story to it that they continued to tell in the ring. They had story leading into it, but they carried it into the ring, and you saw that post-match. And I thought that post-match, you know, thing between those two was probably, like, one of the most...
Yeah.
Heartfelt, like... Yeah.
And like every match at the CWC has been ended kind of in that emotional state of, you know, good job, we shake hands, this is well done to both of us.
Right.
But yeah, of course, Gargano, those guys, it was a different level.
Right. But that was a completely different match. Like, that was probably like the most brutal match you'll see that doesn't involve blood or weapons.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
But just two guys just beating the crap out of each other with their own feet and hands.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you had Ibushi and Cedric Alexander, and I don't even know what to call that match. You know? Like, it was just... It was...
Yeah.
Crazy pants, you know?
I think we'll get more in the CWC. I don't think... Yeah, there's no way that all of them could be that good.
It's no. No.
But I am optimistic about the
future. Yeah, and I hope that the crowd doesn't chant to hire every single loser from here on out.
Yeah,
because that part of, because you know, You colored it different and everything. You painted it different, but that's still the Full Sail crowd.
Yeah, it's still the Full Sail crowd. Yeah,
and they anything can get over with them.
Yeah, I don't even know if they painted it different. They just changed color on all the monitors.
Changed the color of the monitors. Changed the format.
The ring's different. Yeah.
Yeah, but beyond that, it's still the Full Sail crowd.
Yeah, it's still the Full Sail crowd. It's kind of like This Is Awesome chance, or, you know, once something gets over once with the crowd, mm-hmm. they're going to try it every single time that they can from then on.
Yeah, absolutely. So, wow, we made it, Neil.
Yeah, we did a full solid hour.
With minimal tangents, to be honest with you.
And only like one swear, I think.
Which is great for you.
All right. Especially because
you haven't been on the podcast in a long time.
No, not in a long time.
Wow, look at you.
Hey.
Don't mess it up now, please.
It's really tempting.
I mean, granted, you're the one, like, it's one of those things, like, you can mess up all you want, it just depends on how much editing you want to do.
Yeah, just right now, bleep, 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 bleep.
Yeah, absolutely. Or you could, like, playfully edit to make it sound like I'm cursing like a sailor right now. Like, just now, you could have been like, I'm just bleeping like a bleep right now, you know what I mean? So you have anything else you want to add?
Oh, I don't think so.
Is there anything you want to plug? You want to plug your Twitter that you don't use?
I did that on the Raw.
Yeah, I noticed. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for plugging your own. Uh-huh. Thanks for getting your own ish in.
Uh-huh. No, I think I'm good.
All right, cool. Let's see if I can do this all by myself. We are on Twitter. At CR Attire. Check us out where we live tweet all Mondays. No, we don't. But still follow us because you never know. We might have Neil guest tweet every now and then.
I think I'm pretty entertaining.
Yes. Even with the D&D references, you were entertaining. But we'll definitely be on for Brooklyn 2. Cool. And we'll be on for SummerSlam. And we'll have some sort of coverage the rest of that week because mm-hmm. it's going to be a lot of wrestling that week.
A lot of wrestling.
So again, that's follow at CR Attire on Twitter. If you have any questions, comments, anything you want us to bring up on the show, send that over to our email. That's classringattire@gmail.com. We are on iTunes. Just search Class Ring Attire and hit subscribe. And while you're at it, go ahead and leave us a comment. Leave us a rating of 5 stars.
5 stars.
Thank you. And just all that kind of stuff helps all the metrics with the show and it brings us to a new audience. The more you guys review and the more you guys rate, mm-hmm. The bigger this whole thing can be and the less sad our mail is. And we are also on Facebook. Nope, that's not it yet. We
tried to do it in order, huh?
Yeah. I was doing it in Joel order.
Okay.
Because that's the only way I can remember all this stuff. If you're listening to us on InsidePulse.com, leave us a comment on there. We'd love to hear from you. And finally, we are on Facebook where you can find us posting old stuff from the shows. You can go back. You can find all the YouTube links from the shows that we're doing. Just in case you're not on iTunes for some ungodly reason. But it's also a good way that you can, like, keep up with me and Joel, stuff that we do outside of the podcast, stuff that we do with The Relevant But Awesome, our parent company,
mm-hmm.
Also owned by me and Joel. Monopoly! That's probably not what Monopoly is.
Not really.
Shut up. But yeah, go to search Class Ring Attire on Facebook, and you'll find our page there, and plenty other information about the show. So, until next time, when we have Joel back, and we can have all this stuff organized again, stay classy and huzzah.
Huzzah.